Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council and Redevelopment Agency meeting for Tuesday, January 11th, 2005, City of Arroyo Grande. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Dickens.
Here.
Council Board Member Arnold.
Here.
Council Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Costello.
Here.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara.
Here as well. Next on our agenda is the flag salute, and we have Mr. Charles Howell and Amy Clayton here from the VFW in Grover Beach. And they're here to lead us in the flag salute. If you would remain standing. Pastor George Lepper is here from Peace Lutheran Church, and he will lead us in the invocation.
Let us pray. Father in heaven, we do thank and praise you for this day, for the rain that you have brought, that have brought new green to our hills and to fill the waters and made things new. Be with us in our church council, our city council tonight. Be with us that we may make wise decisions. Be with our fire department, police department, city workers. Be especially, Lord, during this time, especially for those who have been victims of flooding and the tsunami. Help them, Lord, and help us to have an attitude of generosity and oneness, not only in this community, but also in the world. Be with all those who are volunteering and workers who are helping those in need. Be especially those who serve in the armed forces, especially those in Iraq, that as in the weeks to come, that the first free election can happen and that they may truly bring their country to a time of peace. Be our president and our Congress. Help our church, help our city, help our nation, that we may all work together, Lord, to make this a city and this country a better place to live. We pray this in the name of our risen Lord and Savior. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you both. Thanks for the invocation, Pastor, and thanks for leading us in the flag salute. And we will be most mindful of the reasons why we're here with the pledge and honoring our troops. So thank you once again for being here. That will take us to item number 5, special presentations. We have none this evening. Item 6 is agenda review. Move that all resolutions and ordinances presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come up and offer their observations or statements on items that are not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters not published on the agenda. We would ask that you would try and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less, and please address the council as a whole. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to come forward at this time? Okay, seeing none, we will close community comments and suggestions. That will take us to item number 8, which is the consent agenda. This is generally these are generally items that the council has had an opportunity to review in depth, and we normally approve these consent items in one motion unless there is an item that a member of the council would like to pull for further comment or separate action. What is the will of the council?
Mr. Mayor, can we pull item 8D since Mr. Guthrie and I were not here for all of the minutes?
8D. Okay, 8D, did you say?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold, did you wish to abstain from that in view? Or
well, I was actually present for two of the three.
Okay, we'll pull that, and you can address that. Any other items? I would like to just pull for a brief comment. Why am I not finding it?
The top of page 4.
I'm sorry, 8L. Okay.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any discussion? Anything to read in there, Tim?
No.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay, well, why don't we just take them in order then? I requested 8B. Take a look at that. And Angela and I had a brief discussion regarding this, and I guess what I'd like is just some clarification on I can find it here. The statement of investment deposits. If you look at the second page of the staff report, there's a graph at the bottom, kind of a matrix that talks about current investments. And the question I had for Angela was perhaps it's time we took a look at that in terms of some potential diversification. We're looking at a substantial amount of money here at 2% return. And so my thinking was that, and I'm not certain, but my thinking was that we could perhaps look and see what's out there in the way of a stable fund that would allow us to enjoy a higher rate of return on at least partial some of the investment. So, comments?
Well, under your direction, I can look into that and bring it back to council and give you some choices and give you some other rates and things like that for agencies like we talked about.
Yeah.
And treasuries and other things like that.
Okay. Do you want to add anything, Steve?
No, I mean, and we have looked at it in the past. Normally, LAIF provides, for the level of security we want, the most competitive rate, but it's been a while since we looked at it, and we're always interested to see if there's other things out there that would provide the same level of security but a higher rate of return.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously we got to balance, risk and return, but, again, there's a lot of stable funds out there, and, for a small amount of money we can perhaps afford to go out and realize a better return on our money than 2%. Okay. So we'll take a look at that at some point in the future. Awesome. Angela, thank you. And we'll move on to 8D. Councilmember Arnold?
Yes, I believe there were 3 minutes. There was the November 23rd, which myself and Councilmember Guthrie were not here for, but then we were here for part of the December 6th and the December 14th meetings. So I had no problems with the minutes. I just could vote on the two that I was here for and not the one that I wasn't.
That if you weren't there, typically you don't feel comfortable voting on the minutes because you'd have no recollection of whether they're accurate or not. What you're really voting on is the clerk's recollection of what happened and her, notation as to exactly what she felt happened there. So there's no legal prohibition on you not participating, but that's a fine way to handle it. And that is, if you want to participate, you can. We'll just note for the record that for that particular set of minutes, the two council members have abstained. Either way, it'd be fine.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve Consent Item 8B and Consent Item 8D with the notations indicated by Councilmember Arnold and Councilmember Guthrie?
So moved. Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's an interesting bit of information, Tim. No one has ever clarified that for me, and there have been occasions where I've abstained because of not being present at a meeting, but no one has ever put it that way. I won't do that anymore. Okay, that takes us to Item 9, we have no public hearings this evening. Item 10, continued business, we have none. Item 11, new business, we have two items. 11A, consideration to accept the updated city traffic model. Good evening, Don.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. At the end of 2003, the city adopted or approved a consultant services agreement to provide citywide traffic monitoring and retainer services. Of course, central to the citywide traffic monitoring program were the revisions and update to the computerized citywide traffic model. Of course, the model is a planning tool to estimate current traffic flow patterns and also forecast future travel demands and traffic flow patterns within the city. But in order to remain a useful tool in analyzing existing and future traffic conditions, the model requires periodic updating. The updated model is complete, and the computer output is being presented for council review and acceptance this evening. I've invited Monty Inouye. He's the principal with Omni Means, who was instrumental in preparing the update. So I'll turn it over to Marty, and he can lead you through the presentation.
Thank you, Don. Mayor Farrar, members of City Council, it's a pleasure for me to be here this evening to present our first year's work with the city's traffic model update. We are engaged in a three-year process. The first year, as Don expressed, that we're going to be updating this citywide traffic model. And the way we did that was we wanted to make sure that we were consistent with what was going on in the region. And so we used the same software service policies to make sure that the quality of life is maintained within your city. Briefly, just walking through the traffic model update process, we start out with first a simulation of current traffic conditions. So what are the current daily traffic conditions? What we do is we go through on a daily basis, and there's a number of locations of traffic counts that we've taken throughout the city, as well as there's about 20 some odd locations that we've taken ourselves, along with about a half dozen locations that the SLOCOG has taken throughout 2002 and 2003 of current traffic conditions in the area. We then evaluate, relative to level service standard, how well that your roadway systems are currently operating. And I think you know of some of the locations that you have issue with in terms of East Brand Street and portions of Grand Avenue and some of those types of areas around Halcyon. But in general, your circulation system is operating quite well. Our first step in creating the traffic model is once we understand generally from a daily traffic flow condition what the traffic volumes are, we then go in to try to simulate that using the computer. And what we do is we break down the city into what we call TASs, or traffic analysis zones, and we break down the whole city into these smaller zones, and we and through the information geographic information system that the county has been able to create and supplemented with city information, we know by parcel all the land land uses and land development within your current city. We also know from that those files what the planned land uses are for every parcel within your city. And so it's that land use information that's broken down into your traffic analysis zones is the basis for generating traffic. You know, for example, roughly 10 trips per dwelling unit is being generated from your homes, different rate for apartments, different rate for commercial development. And we start working with those standard rates and then massage them to the particular characteristics of travel characteristics of your city. And we assign that traffic over the major circulation system within the city. And so outline the major circulation system of, and those are the streets that we're monitoring for traffic control and simulation. We then create another table of comparison of some 30-some locations throughout your city of where our computer simulates your daily traffic volumes. And when we get a close simulation and there's industry standards for what is considered simulation, we've accomplished the base start of a updated traffic model. From there, we take the vacant land in your city with your and understanding what your general plan designations are for that vacant land, build out that land consistent with your plans, and then we can forecast future travel conditions throughout your city and identify what kind of deficiencies and what kind of capital improvements will be required at that location. We also understood and inventoried all the traffic movements, the left turn, right turn, channelization, through movements, and the lanage, and determine what kinds of peak hour levels of service are within your city. And then we created a peak hour traffic model, and the network is a little bit more simplified, but we used a different program rather than what I described to you as Transcab before. This is a traffic model that now evaluates peak hour conditions. And now what we did is within the we identified, in addition to your existing development and the traffic levels that are associated with that, we then identified all the there were roughly 20 approved or pending projects that have not been built yet and that are placing traffic on your system. And we identified what those were so we could understand on a short-term basis what, if we added all the traffic from all those 20 different projects, what your short-term base would be and how well the levels of service would operate. This is the trip generation from those 20 projects and how they are, in fact, added to the circulation system. This is the existing plus approved projects peak hour intersection evaluation. So now we've taken all the existing traffic, overlaid the pending or the approved projects onto your system so you could understand on a short-term basis how well your system is working. And then we run levels of service calculations to determine where, if there's any issues of problem that need to be resolved. We also did that on a cumulative basis and identified what your traffic levels were with the build-out, even under a peak hour condition, to assess if even in the long term on a peak hour basis you have problems that need resolution. That, and this is the level service table for cumulative long-term conditions. And then what we did was we evaluated your capital improvement program. And essentially the key capital improvements that you have in your program, and this is right out of the text of your program itself, you have improvements along East Grand, the Briscoe-Halcyon interchange, PA&ED, traffic signal at West Branch and Camino Mercado, optimization around the West Branch, El Camino. All those improvements that you have largely address both the daily and peak hour issues that were identified in our traffic model. So as far as we're concerned, and what we did was I tried to keep my presentation short, but basically it's all documented in a report that we're presenting this evening to you that basically says we do have a good understanding of daily and peak hour traffic conditions within your city, and we are going to be now looking at how to continue to monitor those. And we've been also assisting the city in doing specific traffic impact studies. You had a mixed-use project on Briscoe Road. You have other things that you're evaluating or will evaluate relative to a Wells Fargo application, for example, and some other things that you have in the pipeline that we're looking at. We will add those project program that's responsive to meeting the community's needs to maintain good circulation within your city. That ends my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
I have one question, Marty, if you don't mind.
Sure.
In determining some of the results of the traffic study, how did you determine peak hour? What did you use as the peak hour?
On a citywide basis, we typically look at AM and PM peak hour traffic conditions because when we're dealing with residential and commercial, you know, the whole city traffic conditions, the typical commute hours in the AM and PM on an average weekday is used. We do know that there's specialized locations, such as around in different communities. And I was aware that in around commercial areas, there may be other peak hours. And what we do is, if those things are identified early on within the analysis, that some special times need to be looked, for example, a Saturday afternoon or something that's associated with a specific development application, then those will be considered as well within the scope of a traffic impact analysis.
Were those indicated to you at all during this study?
Again, this is the general citywide evaluation, and that was the direction that we moved forward with to deal with daily and average weekday peak conditions.
Well, let me be more specific. As I recall back when we were updating our general plan, there was a lot of focus on the circulation element. And in particular, there were a number of examples used with regard to peak period. And I know myself, in several discussions related to this, we talked about the fact that particularly around our commercial areas, Five City Center in particular, there's no such thing as a peak period. And there's no such thing as AM, PM weekday breakdown. Some of the more difficult circulation problems that materialize occur on the weekends, all hours. To give you a more finite illustration, if you look at Branch Street from Briscoe up the hill towards Five City Center, we've seen cars queuing there at 11 o'clock in the morning on a weekday or on a weekend. And we've seen them queuing all the way back to Rancho Parkway through the signal so that cars can't move through the signal when it turns green. That doesn't occur just on the standard accepted peak period times for these kinds of studies. So, those were the kinds of special circumstances that we wanted to make sure got addressed here.
For the five cities, and I've been asked to do an evaluation for, we want to convert the whole system over, citywide system, to that direction. We would need further direction to do that.
Maybe I can help clarify from the staff standpoint. I think what Marty's indicating, that the overall model, citywide model, is based on a weekday peak, but the staff's direction is on any traffic studies that involve particularly the Briscoe interchange and the Camino Mercado branch intersections, that those traffic studies will include a peak hour analysis on weekend, during weekend hours.
Okay. All right. Are there any other questions on the staff report, Councilmember Arnold?
In the first paragraph under discussions, it talks about traffic flow patterns within and through the city. Was there any consideration for how projects that are online or coming in the county going to impact our traffic? And the one that I think of specifically is the Woodlands. Mm-hmm.
Well, interestingly, we're also a consultant to the county for the South County evaluation, and that's in the city's traffic model addresses the city traffic conditions. What we would rely on is the SLOCOG is currently in the process of creating a regional model that would address cross flows from different communities, you know, be it from Napomo, you know, the Woodlands area, or from Oceano, or from Grover Beach. And what we do in evaluating at the perimeter or the city limits is what those increases have and will be based on what we're using now is growth factor information. Because we don't have a regional model, once we have the regional model that accounts for all the growth within the San Luis Obispo County region, then we will use those to adjust your gateways in and out of your city to reflect those types of projects that would be coming through your city.
So it's fair to say that right now some of the traffic flows that you're saying are maybe at an acceptable level, in reality, because these projects aren't being factored in, we really could be seeing an impact in the next few years that your model wouldn't be showing.
That is true, because we don't have, you know, we would have to go outside of your city and identify and try to calculate what that that additional impact would be, the routes that they would take. You know, would the Willow interchange be constructed that it would be on 101, or would it, or is it going to come up Highway 1 or Los Barros and up Halcyon? You know, those are the things that we won't know, and that's what the benefit of a regional model is. But that's not within the scope or context of what we're trying to do for you.
Okay. The other thing that I'd like to follow up with what the mayor was talking about, as far as the peak times, I noticed real quick while I was trying to catch them when you were showing them up, and you showed the Orchard in Fair Oaks as being, I think, an A, and that's true some of the time.
Other than when school's in.
But, yeah, exactly. But those peak hours don't fall on the typical 8 and 5. So I would say that, you know, that definitely
can understand what it is on a regular weekday condition, and then also understand those special circumstances that will be clearly stated within the monitoring reports of what other issues that need to be addressed and you need to be concerned about, so you can have a running inventory of your traffic conditions. The models themselves are around the weekday peak. If we'll have further discussions with staff if we want to change all that to you know weekday conditions. But we, you know, again, the hours may differ depending on the type of project it is, and given that we're, you know, the most standard peak that's within your city of, you know, with all your homes and businesses and stuff like that, there's still a lot of traffic, you know, during those weekday conditions. And then it translates into how do you want to, what kind of capital improvement program do you want to address? What impacts do you want to solve? And those are your questions. And we were happy to be the tools and the hands that can do the technical analyses that can give you those answers. But and so we'll follow that direction. But to change from a weekday to a weekend, you know, we can handle that in special circumstances, or unless you feel that those are we want to move in a different direction and say we want to develop a capital improvement program around weekend conditions. We can do that. We're at your pleasure of how you want to control traffic conditions and evaluate levels of service and maintain, you know, traffic flow within your city.
And the last question I have is, does the model have the ability to, I guess, reevaluate itself to look at, we predicted this and now we have the actual results of what is happening on a project, and basically grade the model, I guess?
I guess we'd like to have computers do all things, but that would be more of a human review of how well did, you know, for example, we do, one of the concerns we had for the five cities, as we looked at, we actually counted, you know, and compared actual traffic counts to the original projections. That kind of information is very helpful, but it's more of a manual exercise. It's not a computer reevaluating how well we did. We can go back and look 3 years out and say, okay, now these projects are built. What are the traffic flow conditions? And we will provide those types of updates, because we'll take the projects that are in fact built and occupied off those lists. Because as we update, you know, traffic count information in those areas that have the traffic that's now on those streets that's being generated from occupied development projects. So we can go through that process. The intent of the whole monitoring program is not to, you know, revisit all the traffic counts at 30-some-odd locations throughout your city every year. We're just trying to – we're doing it now and then in the specialized locations we'll be supplementing all that information with new information as staff and we determine best evaluate the conditions to report. But we're not going to go through the whole city every year to try to count.
So only certain key places are assigned. Right. And is that spelled out in the plan? That we would see where we would expect to see continued monitoring? Is that, since none of us have actually seen the plan?
The issue is the crystal ball of where that actually occurs. And your city is such that it's compact, and I think we'll be working with staff to make sure that the key locations, particularly the areas that are very sensitive, if there's high levels of service, those are not the sensitive areas, and we don't need to recount those. The areas that are on the cusp of having to do improvements, those are the ones that we're going to be focusing on. Those are the areas that we're going to recount on a regular basis, because if it starts going over certain thresholds, then the priorities of those capital improvements may change as the growth in those areas change.
So the model will be updated based on additional data at specific location, but not throughout the city.
Right, not on a, you know, redo the whole thing again. It's a pretty costly exercise. Not so much for us, but that's a lot of people out there counting intersections and counting.
And that was the other question I had that has to do with how you actually establish the data. Is this, having done this back in college, the guy sitting there with the tablet marking off X many people turned left, or is this done with the tubes?
It has become computerized. There's a little box that has all these arrows in it. That. Yeah, no, we're beyond the hash marks.
I've gone beyond hash marks. That's a good thing, I guess.
And the daily counts are done on machines that are not in big boxes anymore. They're in little tiny computerized boxes. But essentially, the process is the same. All we're trying to do is be strategic with the sampling, strategic with your money, making sure that we're not spending money where we don't have to.
Okay, and if you want to, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to add, in addition to those updates, one of the aspects of the approach that we've tried to implement here is by having one consultant perform the majority of the traffic studies. In addition to those ongoing counts, the intent is as traffic studies are done on specific projects, that data then will be entered into the model. So that'll help us enable us to keep it up to date in terms of any changes from projects that come online.
So some of the data would be generated by virtue of the fact that we require traffic studies for projects, and some of the data would be generated because we need to look at an intersection that, because no projects have been proposed recently, hasn't been studied recently.
That's the advantage of having, in most cases, having the same consultant that's updating the model doing the traffic studies. They will be taking those traffic counts for those studies, and then those will be entered into the model. So it will be constantly updated as projects change, potentially changing the model, come online.
The other question I had, which is following up on this time element, as far as, say, in order to, let's say we selected an area we felt needed to be studied on Saturday afternoon, would you have to redo the traffic counts for the entire city in order to get an accurate model? It would only be for the three or four intersections directly around there. I mean, I realize the more data, the more accurate it is, but how?
Our focus was to take more of a sampling in the immediate area, mm-hmm. to monitor the comparisons, to make sure that the mitigations that we are coming up with for the daily, the average weekday, are appropriate. If we find that the peak hour conditions,
I was just going to say this issue will come up fairly quickly because they're performing a traffic study on Pad I at the Five City Center. That traffic study will have specific data regarding trips and trip counts for weekend hours.
But that'll be only in the immediate Camino Mercado Briscoe area. For instance, you wouldn't go down and study Oak Park and Branch to see whether that's the chip generation area of that traffic.
That
may be true. All right.
It's still under discussion.
Okay. All right. Those are all my questions. Thanks.
Do you have any questions? Marty, a couple questions. First of all, in your report, you talked about the traffic counts, and I think you said that you had specifically identified 20 locations that that were actual counts were taken, and then you had other studies that you also brought in some other locations and were able to gather that specific data, not based on land use, but actual counts of those the traffic circulation and those intersections, I believe.
That's correct.
Okay. I believe the dates you used were 2002 and 2003 for those particular counts. So at this particular time, we're really, or I guess I would assume that we're a year already out. So did those take into account the when you talked about future or immediate future needs or changes, did those include the things that were then approved within from in the last year, 2004?
Yeah, the counts that we took were all done when we started the process.
Okay.
And for the most part, we have also incorporated any other project that we've been working on. I think there's only one traffic study that we haven't done that we still need some additional information. But I don't think it wasn't a large project, and I think that will be covered in the update. The 2002 counts that I referred to were the ones that were done by SLOCOG at the end of 2002 when they are creating their regional model. At the time when we got started, which was early 2003 in this whole process, they are only about 3 or 4 months old. So that's why we use those counts. We've gone through the process over this year. We completed the draft. And then we're here early 2005 only because of the presentation schedules and holidays and things like that. But the information was pretty much the analysis of this effort and our contract was to do the model update in 2003, which is – I'm sorry. You know what? I'm a year off because I'm old. It's 2003, 2004, not 2002, 2003. I apologize for that. Years just have seemed to slip away. I'm a year off.
Okay.
So the counts were done in 2003 and 2004. We are, in fact, in 2005. I'm sorry I am a year behind everybody.
That's helpful. When we talk about the ongoing monitoring, year two and year three of this particular model, that monitoring is...
And so there's two parts to that. Is, yes, we can, in fact, train, if staff desires, to use this model information. There's two models. There's the TransCAD model and the traffics model. Not in our contract was the actual purchase of the software. There's a licensing of that. And so if the city chooses to purchase the license, then they can certainly, use the models that have been created.
So six years from now, and we want to have we want to plug in let's say a project that's happened or something like that that's going to update this model, then we need to come back to you if we do not purchase the software, and have you then do the updates for us.
Yes, or any other traffic consultant that has the ability to create these models. Largely the information is owned by the city. But I'm just saying the license program, I don't think it's any different than you using Excel or Word or something like that, on your computer or AutoCAD in a civil-type application. That it's a software package.
And I do understand that this is extremely complicated, and it's not. I mean, it's a difficult science to put down on paper. But I guess my question then to Don is let's say we've expended a sum of money on this particular traffic modeling. What is it as far as your intention as to how is that then going to be utilized in the future by you and your staff? And how do you perceive then as projects or information coming back to the council, what type of information and how accurate is that information going to be to allow us to make good policy decisions?
Well, I think in the short term, the idea was to take that information that we get as far as the average daily traffic on streets to provide that to whoever may want that information. That's in the short term. We can do that. We're going to have a printout that's going to be hanging on our wall that we can provide that information. In the long term, I think after the contract is over, I think we're going to come back to the council at that time and say, what is the desire of the council, whether you want to have that ability on staff to to provide that information, to run the model, then we need certain things to do that. And, you know, have the council make a decision at that time whether they want to continue using the services of Marty or some other consultant, or whether the council wants to go ahead and develop the resources to actually run the model in-house. So I think we're going to try to decide that and after the contract is over.
We've had some initial discussions about that. I mean, the primary difficulty is it is so technical. You pretty much, to do that type of work, except for some basic analysis, it's something that somebody needs to do on a, you know, almost a daily basis to remain proficient in it. And I'm not sure. Use of consult services currently works pretty well because we don't really have a daily need for that type of service. It would be difficult to almost have to add a full-time in-house person.
You're not alone in that. In fact, we've developed models for Paso Robles, Atascadero, Grover Beach, and three communities of San Luis Obispo County.
And we're going to be needing to make some decisions, as Don talked about, in regards to how we then utilize this model and how we effectively get as accurate and as current as information to make good decisions about you know, future land use, about size and scale of projects, and how that those new projects will then impact our existing circulation system. So from a policy standpoint, I'm always one that wants to get as accurate of information as possible. Since I've been on council, I can certainly say I'm not certainly a technically minded individual, but traffic studies has been a difficult thing for us to pinpoint and to actually decide on, you know, what are we really looking at here? And I know I've heard it from others that have struggled with that from a policymaking standpoint as we make decisions. And it was my intention and my hope that with this traffic model, we would probably get our arms around this much better. And I'm still not convinced that we're there yet, and so I still have some concerns about getting my arms around this traffic circulation problem that from a policy standpoint, and really getting some accurate information, because modeling is one thing, and then as the mayor talked about, let's look at our specific needs, and certainly around the Five Cities Center is an area of concern. Arroyo Grande High School still it tends to be a concern area, and those are not our typical peak hours. And we have some items to look at, and we want to look at capital improvement projects that will help mitigate those issues, both from a public improvement standpoint and as development occurs, how we can have that those individuals help mitigate those situations. So I guess from my point of view, just giving feedback, and I appreciate the presentation, I want to make sure that it's something that's going to be usable, something that's, you know, we as the lay people up here, policymakers, can actually get our hands around. And if we need a signal at the off-ramp at Fair Oaks, obviously, when Caltrans, you know, showed us that model, that was really eye-opening. What that negative impact would actually be with a signal there. Those are the types of things that I want to be able to see and to evaluate as we work through these issues. So, thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem, Chip, questions?
Yes, just really quickly. In talking about the true peak hours, if we determine that there's a different peak hour that other than traditional, it's going to be up to us to say, to identify that time to you and then have you go out and investigate that for us or get the data for us?
Well, for example, and City Manager mentioned that we are in the process of doing the traffic impact study for the five cities, is we're going to try to identify, we're going to lay, we laid hose counts out at all the driveways of the shopping center on a weekday condition. So that was a 24-hour count. So we know when cumulatively at all the driveways what the peak hours were of the weekday. We're going to do the same thing at some key driveways, particularly along Rancho Parkway, to evaluate that, and there's potential. So we can
the points that was brought out in the policy. So.
And one last question. Understand that you're also doing the regional model for SLOCOG.
No, we are not.
You are not. But the intent is that whatever that regional model comes up with, then that will be able to be integrated with our model to come up to some sort of...
That is what the intent is. We are using the same TransCAD software that the regional model is using.
So you're using the same software, but are we necessarily using the same assumptions and same methodology?
The overall methodology is the same. The assumptions will probably be different because they're calibrated or they're adjusted for your city conditions. Every city has differing travel characteristics and travel patterns, and in the adjustment, calibration is an adjustment of the factors that we have, the assumptions that we have, that create the simulation of if there's 20,000 cars out on East Branch Street, I need to be able to simulate that same 20,000 cars, and there's factors that we use to do that. And sometimes in different communities we found that trip generation from an average residential unit varies anywhere from about 8.5 trips per on a daily basis to 11.5, depending on the community and their travel habits. And so we use those kinds of factors to adjust, to bring in line. If we have in a citywide system too much traffic, it's generally because we're using a standard rate that is over and above what the city's the residents typically travel. And similarly, if it's way low, we make those adjustments to bring everything back in line. That's why every model that is created on a citywide or a sub-regional basis is unique. It's specifically adjusted to simulate travel conditions. Now, it's not going to be accurate because we're trying to act in a sense that it's going to be exact numbers because we're trying to simulate human travel behavior, but it's going to be reasonably close within parameters that are established by our industry.
So we might need to be careful about mixing apples and oranges if we look at a regional study and try to add that data in just to...
Well, the regional model is done on a daily basis only. It's not done on a peak hour basis. The TransCAD model that we created that we developed is on a daily basis because those are the macro evaluations that we're dealing with. To supplement understanding your specific desire and need to have some peak hour capability to understand how intersections work and things like that, we supplemented that daily traffic model that you actually, that we updated, and we added something. It was really not directly a part of our contract, but we felt because we had monitoring responsibilities, we had to understand the peak hour conditions, that we actually supplemented that within our scope to provide that additional information. We saw the value of it. We saw the ability to respond to your questions. We also saw the ability and enhancement for us to be more responsive in doing the traffic impact studies that were coming online to in fact do that work. So it was the economy of being able to be responsive in providing traffic impact studies on a ready basis by providing a base network.
One of the things that this study shows is it's extremely important for us to make as accurate a general plan or housing element type plan as we can, because anything that would be skewed that wouldn't project a realistic growth in certain areas would also skew this kind of a plan of acquiring data. If they're using projected development as to how the cities have given land uses and potential volume of building in certain areas, that would need to be relatively accurate as to what would really get built. Because that's how they're using, those are the tools they're using to project where traffic would come from in the future. That's all I have.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring this back for final comments from the council. Council Member Dickens, why don't you start it off?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Marty, thank you. Appreciate this. I think what would be helpful for me is to maybe sit down with you and or Don one of these days and look at this, because I know there's so much to this. We didn't have the pleasure of actually the document before you to actually review that, and I know there's just a wealth of information in there, and I know you're
about an inch and a half.
Exactly, which is certainly is not needed necessarily to present all that this evening, but just to get my arms around it so that we can see. You know, what it is, the data that's there as this data comes before us and we look at it, exactly, you know, how we can evaluate that. So that would be great. So I appreciate this. I've been a real advocate for this modeling because I think it'll help us in a lot of different ways. I think it'll also help the building community kind of get a better idea of where we're at and what those impacts can be and how I believe, you know, how we can mitigate these particular issues in a reasonable and equitable fashion. So I'm really pleased to see this come forward, and I appreciate all the work you've put into it.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, I too am kind of curious to read the document. Are we going to get a copy of the document in the long run? Okay. Because the other option here that I think might be a good one would be to look at doing a workshop-type format with the Planning Commission and the Traffic Commission in particular and present. I realize we're going to see the highlights of project by project, but looking at the entire city and seeing other areas where, in fact, traffic's not an issue, where we're not going to discuss it, but that doesn't mean that it's not important to look at how this model affects those areas. So I think a workshop format with the Planning and Traffic Commission would probably be very useful, maybe including the council, although if we videotape it, then we could all watch it on videotape. But in general, I do think these kind of modeling, even though, you know, you do really have to take them with a grain of salt, they are estimates, but I do think these kind of modeling at least gives us an idea of what might happen based on the track improvements that we're all looking forward to accomplishing and what the impacts of specific projects may be. I do think going forward that if the only way that we're going to...
Chair, I too would like to get a hold of that document. Obviously, we've seen just a small piece of it tonight. I do have a little concern with when the peak hours were used on a few of the intersections as we discussed. But I do also agree that, as a whole, it'll be a very useful document for us. I'd like to second Councilmember Guthrie's idea on a workshop. I think that would be an excellent idea. I know that when on the Planning Commission, the traffic studies were the area that I probably glazed over the most because of the confusion. I do know that was one of his favorite areas, so it worked out well. But I would like to commend you on your work and... look forward to actually looking at the document.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to echo my colleagues' appreciation for the work that's been done and also want to take a look at the document in full. This is a good tool, but that's all it is a tool. It's something to help us evaluate the potential for impacts. And I think we have to keep in mind that as discussed earlier, that when we talk about projects that are outside the scope of the city, there will be impacts on that, and that they may be, I'm not going to say flawed, but their evaluations may not be equivalent to ours, and we have to be somewhat careful about comparing apples and pineapples. But I do look forward to the tool. I think it is a good tool. It will help us to make some informed decisions. And thanks for the efforts.
Thank you.
Thanks. I just need to clarify something, Don. What is it that you want us to do this evening? I see the staff recommendation, and that is to accept the city's traffic model update. What does that mean?
Well, I think we're asking that the council accept it so that the staff can start using it.
Okay. I'm sure that the document is everything that we asked for, I would be lying if I sat here and said that I feel comfortable with this. I don't. I feel uneasy with voting to accept a traffic model that I haven't seen, a document that I haven't reviewed. And that's essentially what we have here, as was pointed out by a couple of my colleagues. I'll go along with the will of the council, but I wanted to note the fact that I would have had a higher degree of comfort had I had an opportunity to review in depth some of the findings and the conclusions in that document. But what you're asking us to do this evening is accept this thing sight unseen, aside from the presentation, which I concur was a good one, Marty. I don't want to rain too much on the parade here, but I do want to focus on the fact that I do have some reservations. Strategy and terminology here that I think perhaps needs to be put in lay terms, and maybe a demonstration and a walkthrough of this would be in order, and I would wholeheartedly support that occurring as soon as we can possibly do it. There are two words that come to mind when I listen to the presentation and the comments from my colleagues, and the two words are timing and utility. Timing as it relates to an issue that Councilmember Arnold brought up, I think, early on in the discussion this evening, and that is the regional traffic model. And I'm extremely concerned about the timing of that regional model as it relates to our model. And Councilmember Arnold pointed out one project, which was the Woodlands. There are certainly many others that have high intensity of use that certainly based on circulation and trip generation are going to affect our city. So what does that do to the data that we have now? As Councilmember Dickens indicated, that data will be used to make policy decisions on projects and development. I'm uneasy with the timing of the regional model versus the city model that we have now, particularly in view of the fact that some of the circulation patterns, some of the intensity of use, some of the trip generation in areas that are beyond our control are going to have a direct impact on us. How do we massage all of that and use this tool to make those kinds of decisions? That's a rhetorical question. The other term, which was utility, and I'll defer to you, Don or Steve, on this, but I remember discussions that we've had over the past year, year and a half, 2 years, Don, on this traffic model. And, I was sort of waiting anxiously for this particular model because of its forecasted utility for the city in terms of our ability to use it ourselves. When we talked early on in this process, we talked about the traffic model in terms of utility with a view toward structuring out dependency on outside consultants. We talked about the ability for us to use it in a timely fashion whenever decisions had to be made by simply plugging in trip generation numbers and having findings come out of this traffic model so that we could not only have rapid feedback and decision-making for the council, but we could feed back to developers as well. Project applicants. I'm hearing a little bit different story this evening about that whole process, and I have some questions about that. We can perhaps sit down at some point and discuss that, but those are concerns with regard to utility.
I think he's going to take what the proposed use is and determine what the potential impacts from that use will be using Sandag numbers, and or available numbers from other sources, including hard numbers where these places are located in other cities, and use that in his analysis to do the routing of the traffic and level of service.
Okay. That's understood. But if you recall the discussion that we had with Investec, specifically as it relates to Pad I, there was talk at one time about the intended use of that as a retail outlet that consumed the entire pad. There was also discussion about two smaller retail uses, the nature of which we had no idea. We still have no idea. The nature of the use of Pad I is going to determine the intensity of use, not a figure that we pull out of our hat from Sandag. That's my concern. That was our concern about the approval of Wells Fargo Bank, because we, putting those two figures together, we had no idea what the intensity of use, specific retailers that Investec had in mind. So that issue is still out there. We still don't know.
Council's direction was for Investec to go back and contract for a traffic study, including all the uses that would be proposed in Pad I, and that's what they've done. This is work based on information they've received from Investec and what, in terms of what Investec is going to propose at that site.
So there's information that there's more information than we knew the last time. Is that?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I guess the only clarification from a viewpoint that I want to make is it was a comment that you made, Marty, and I want to make sure that I at least chime in on my philosophy here as far as the use of this model. You had indicated that we could use the model to prioritize potential capital improvement projects that might develop as a result of development. Is that what you said? Something similar to that.
I think I can't remember the exact words that I used, but the issue is, as your community grows, i.e. development occurs within your community, I don't know. Maybe you have a better crystal ball of exactly what part of your city is growing. You have a capital improvement program. As we see development trends that are occurring within your city in certain areas, there may be a need to look at the capital improvement program and make sure that, and that's what the monitoring is to make sure that you're putting your available dollars in the areas that are necessary. Now, the available dollars that I'm talking about from a capital improvement program may not just be from, you know, your own coffers, but from traffic impact fees and things like that that are being generated by development to meet those needs. I'm just talking about, I'm using the for capital improvement program.
Is already to some degree funded, in motion, strategized to address existing problems. What I guess a hoped for outcome for the use of this traffic model for me isn't to add new capital improvement problems to address problems that or capital improvement projects that will address problems that future development will bring to us, but more appropriately use this model to prioritize whether or not or make decisions as to whether or not future development in certain areas should be allowed.
I think the model and the cumulative evaluation, coupled with the specific traffic impact studies that are tied to the projects, will in fact give you that information. So prior to you approving development, you will have an updated base from the efforts that we're doing, and then you will look from that updated base, add that specific project, because there's some consistency in what we're trying to present to you, that additional project, we will be able to specifically quantify the net increase in impact. Whether that's tolerable or not, whether that's acceptable to you or not, is going to be your decision, but it will be clearly stated with factual information as to what the mitigation is and whether you're willing to accept that or whether it can be mitigated or not, and whether you choose not to move forward with that project or not. Our efforts will be to disclose to you as best as possible before development is in fact approved by you the information you need to understand what the full ramifications of that project are from a traffic circulation standpoint.
Okay, thank you. Well, I have to say, at this point, I am a bit uneasy with accepting this update, simply because I've not had an opportunity to review it in depth, and I'm a little bit concerned about the play between our city model and the regional model. I guess if there are some assurances here that I have to back up a little bit. Do we have any indication at this point when the regional model will be, somewhat down the line so that we can at least view it or reference it?
What I understand in my contact with SLOCOG is that they have just they went through this past year in this calibration simulation process. They are now going on to phase two, which is to look at future growth and take all the local jurisdictions, the cities, the counties, growth plans, and now put that in the model. So as of right now, they don't know. They believe they have a simulation of what I shared with you, but they don't have a projection of what the regional traffic flows will be, and that will probably be a year out from now.
Maybe instead of getting frustrated here, since I sit on the SLOCOG board, maybe I should be getting on their case, which I will do, by the way.
And unseen, would it be appropriate for us to make a motion to receive and file the information presented tonight and that the model be presented to us and then brought back after a couple weeks' reviews for us to absorb some of this information and then ask some more specific questions?
I think that would be totally appropriate, yeah.
Yeah, if you don't mind me jumping in here, because I was just going to make a recommendation similar to that. Actually, if everybody shares the kind of uncomfort level and approval at this point, and we apologize for not having all the information to you. Also, if the majority of the council would like us to schedule that workshop with the other two commissions, I would suggest we schedule the workshop, go through a very detailed presentation of the model, and get the report to you, have time for you to look at it, and then take some formal action. You know, this system really doesn't require a formal action of the council. The whole purpose of this is for you to have a comfort, for us to know you have a comfort level with it before we begin using it as the basis for other traffic studies. So the whole purpose is to get a comfort level. And so if you don't have that yet, I would suggest we wait to do the workshop and then bring it back for discussion at that time and see if you have any comments or changes or other directions you'd like us to incorporate before we finalize it. It's not really finalized, but before we buy off on this phase of it.
My comfort level just went up with your comment, Steve.
Thank you.
So, Mayor Pro Tem, did you have a comment?
Then would we want to continue this to a date uncertain? Mr. Mayor, I'd move that we continue the approval of the traffic model to a date uncertain to be set after the workshop with the Traffic Commission and Planning Commission has been held.
Second that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion?
Only that, would it be concurrent with the workshop, or are we actually talking about another council meeting after the workshop? Just clarification.
I believe we'll have the workshop, and then we'll approve it in a subsequent meeting after the workshop.
Based on the input from the workshop. Okay.
If we could get direction from you at the workshop of anything, any changes you want to make, then we'd probably be able to bring it back and put it on consent at that point.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Marty. Yes,
thank you, and I look forward to the workshop. It'll be fun.
Good. Yeah, I think that'll help things, I think, all the way around.
No,
so
I enjoy doing those, and it'll be fun to work through. And certainly bring your list of issues and traffic circulation issues, and we'll get them all on the table, and we'll start working on them.
Very good. Thanks again. Okay, that takes us to item 11B, consideration of a resolution approving funding assistance for the Family Care Network. Steve, this yours?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. The city has received a request for $50,000 in financial assistance from the Family Care Network for purchase of a five-unit apartment building at 201 South Halcyon Road to be used for transitional housing for youth aging out of foster care. The Family Care Network is currently the largest private nonprofit provider of foster care, children's mental health, and family services in Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo County. Under the program, two participants would be housed in each of four of the units, which would qualify as very low income, experience a very high rate of homelessness, and a very low rate of graduation from high school. Therefore, staff believes the project meets an important need in the community. In addition, just in terms of pure cost-benefit analysis, we believe that obtaining four very low-income affordable units and one moderate-rate unit within the redevelopment area for a subsidy of $50,000 is a very cost-effective utilization of the redevelopment agency's housing funds. Before you this evening is a resolution approving the affordable housing agreement with the Family Care Network and authorizing the executive director of the agency to approve the trust deed and the promissory note, which includes the majority of the restrictions and penalties involving the property. We respectfully recommend the council approve that. However, first I'd like to introduce Bobby Scott, who's here this evening from Family Care Network, to give you a little bit more information about their organization and the project and answer any questions you may have of her. Yeah.
Good evening, Mayor and council members. Thank you very much for considering this request from Family Care Network. Family Care Network, like Steve said, was started in 1987 by our founder, Jim Roberts, who is our executive director. Jim's background is in probation, and he spent many years working in probation, noticing that a lot of kids that are in the foster care system really need therapeutic foster care in order to be successful. And so in 1987, he founded and developed the nonprofit agency Family Care Network to serve foster kids with an intensive level of service, of therapeutic service. The Transitional Housing Placement Program in Family Care started in 1999. The state has a program within the foster care system, and the county now has a program for kids emancipating out of foster care to provide additional life skills training for those kids and services to help them to be successful. Like Steve said, the success rates of foster kids are horrible. About 70% of all incarcerated people in our prison systems were in foster care at one point in their lives. Within 2 years of exiting foster care, about 50% of the foster kids are in homeless shelters, 58%. And about 50% of former foster youth do not graduate from high school. What our program will do is provide daily intervention services for these kids, everything from transporting them to and from school if that's what they need, giving them life skills training such as how to, you know, everything from home maintenance, budgeting, job skills training. We work with ILP and other county partners to provide them the skills they need to give them the best start or the best chance possible to prevent these kids that are entered into this program from having the same fate as the state and national averages. So, and I am the fiscal director of Family Care Network. Do you have any questions?
Is that it? I did have a question. We're talking about 16 to 19-year-olds, is that the age range?
16 to 21 years old, yeah. We have, in some of our language, there's two different providing the service funding for those kids so that we can provide life skills training to youth, that 19 to 21 years old. This project will be the first project we will be able to house four of those youth in that program. And we will house four youth that are still under 18, still technically in the foster care system, and then there will be one mature adult in the complex for monitoring purposes. That person will probably be a staff person also, so they may provide some some technical services for the kids, some day services for the kids as they need it. But in addition to whatever services they would receive from their particular in-home support counselors, what we call them.
So I'm assuming there's 24-hour supervision?
Absolutely. The resident manager would be available. We also have minimally, we have three staff from Family Care Network that are on call 24 hours a day. So that resident assistant would call an in-home support counselor if there was any problem at all to get support, and we would have somebody on the site immediately. You know, not immediately, but quickly. Usually within, we try to have a response within about a half an hour.
Are these young people allowed their own transportation?
We work with different foundations in the community to try to have vehicles donated to the youth if possible. Sometimes we also have a program where if the youth put money into the savings account, we will match that money. It's part of our budget and our funding. So we will match 100% of their deposits up to $200 a month. So we really encourage the youth as part of the program to save. And one of the allowable expenditures of that money is an automobile. But we work with them. And just yesterday I was working with a counselor on a youth that, to help her decide which, you know, what would be an affordable vehicle for her. So we work very closely with the youth and help them to see the short-term and the long-term effect of having transportation. A lot of our kids is unrealistic for them to afford transportation, so we work with the county transportation systems or city transportation systems if possible, or we transport them if needed ourselves.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes.
Bobby, I got a couple questions. First of all, currently how many students are you serving? I call them students, young people. Are you serving in the transitional housing placement program between the ages of 16 to 18?
We have a fiscal year ending June 30th, and last year we served 30 kids in the program.
Countywide.
I don't know the exact number in Arroyo Grande. I know we have a site that we're renting currently in Grover Beach.
Correct.
Last year, we were able to house, I think, up to six at one point, and then we downsized to three there. And I'm not sure if we have any others in the South County. I don't know the demographics right now, today, but I know last year we served 30 kids. There are about 90 kids in the county that qualify for transitional housing. Part of the problem is the availability of housing. A lot of times we're renting units at two-bedroom apartments at...
But probably not 90 that are appropriate.
Well, there is a team of county Department of Social Services, sometimes Mental Health and Family Care Network. Clinical staff are on that team, and they make the decisions about who would be eligible for the program. There are criteria that they would have to meet as far as their functionality, their ability to function in that environment. Additionally, though, we have some constraints on our ability to find housing and resident assistance. The way we set it up with our currently with our resident assistance, it's sometimes difficult to find people that are willing to live with a youth.
Is it the goal if we were to move forward with this particular project, we would probably, I'm assuming from my knowledge, increase the potential number of housing then for our 16 to 18 year olds, because currently we have you have the site in Grover Beach, and I believe that's
a rental for us,
rental.
And we will terminate that rental agreement because it's too expensive if we get this property.
But I believe that would it be able to house less students than this would then.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be the goal of Family Care Network then to obviously keep students in their school of residency? We wouldn't be pulling students from the North County just because we have occupancy down here into the South County. Is that correct?
You know, I'm not on the placement committee, so that is a Department of Social Services placement committee decision. I believe that their priority is to keep the youth in their current school. The priority for the foster kids across the state and in our county is to keep kids in their community environment. So I think that those those youth that were that are already established in foster care or emancipating out of foster care in the Arroyo Grande City or the South County area will be housed in this area if they're selected to participate. We're also looking to our 5-year plan is to have a similar facility in North County and in San Luis Obispo and another one in Santa Maria.
Okay. And that would seem to be the logical thing to do. I was just wondering if this were to open, it would actually open up more bed space so and more housing. So I just was curious as to whether we might see a migration of some young people from out of the area.
That would be up to the Department of Social Services, but my understanding is that would not be their priority.
In regards to the statistics in the second page of the staff report, it talks about the last sentence of the first paragraph. In San Luis Obispo County, less than 15% of youth aging out of foster care have completed high school.
Does that say 15%?
Yes. That can't be correct.
Well, I'm not sure. I didn't write that.
Okay.
But I know the state average is 50%.
Right.
So that may be a typo. I could find out. And
I'm hopeful that that's a typo. I hope we're not less than the state average. I think we do a better job here in this county.
Well, the plight of foster kids is, and the kids that we serve in family care, we are serving the real high functioning, if there is such a thing, a foster child, they may not need our program. So it's a typo.
I hope so. Just for the council's sake, I'm actually working personally with a young lady who's currently in the Grover Beach facility, and it's a wonderful program, and she's doing a wonderful job. And I think that I would concur with what Bobby is saying in regards to this particular population and the selection and so forth. And I just want to make sure that a lot of times my biggest problem with, especially with the high school, is maintaining these stability with these young people and keeping them in an area both in their school and in the community in which they are most familiar, because I think that's where they'll be most successful. Many of these young people do not have stability, and that's part of it. They're torn from one foster home to the next foster home, and they're torn from one school to the next, and that proves to be very problematic for a lot of these young people. So I've seen great success with the two students that I know of. One has actually come out of this program, and one I'm currently working with. And fortunately for this young lady, she's actually 4-year college bound, so she will.
I think I'm familiar with it.
So
that was the same youth that we're working on the vehicle.
Yes. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm definitely supportive.
All right. Any other questions for Bobby while she's at the podium? Okay. Looks like you're off the hook.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Okay, Mayor Pro Tem, you had a question for staff?
Yeah, I've got a question for staff. I noticed that if the property is kept and maintained as affordable for the 55-year period, the loan is considered paid in full. I understand that. What happens if it's not?
Now, let me give a little bit of a general information. I'll let the city attorney get into the specifics. One thing I wanted to point out, this agreement is a little different than the other ones we've dealt with on affordable housing units. In the past, we've had to include some provisions that allow, although we've created as much disincentive as we can, but we've allowed some ability to sell at market rate, and that the reason we've had to do that is we've had to accommodate the banks in order for them to agree on the loan for that property. We've had to have some provision, although, as I said, we've been pretty strict about the disincentives we've included. This project, they are obtaining their funding from the federal government, from the Housing Trust Fund, and from us. So they don't have that same issue. We don't have that same issue trying to comply with some bank requirements. So it's going to be much more restrictive than that. With that, most the actual specific penalties will be laid out in the trust deed and the promissory note, and the attorney maybe comment on how that might be structured specifically.
if the affordability covenants are not complied with, our remedy is to get our money back, essentially to either foreclose and get our money back or to get our money back through another means, get our $50,000 plus interest, which will be provided for in the note under that unfortunate occurrence.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Not only are they satisfied with it, but they were very supportive of the project.
Good, thank you. While this is not a public hearing, if there is a member of the audience who would like to come forward and comment on this item, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay, seeing none, we will close public comment, bring this back to council. Councilmember Arnold, why don't you start us off on this one?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I had some of the same questions and concerns that Joe did earlier, and Steve and I had a chance to talk about that. I definitely want to make sure that we're going to get more than just our money back if there was a default, an intentional default, and specifically to try to work around the covenants. But other than that, I do agree that it's a great utilization of the funds. It's amazing that we will get four very low units for a $50,000 investment. So I can definitely support this. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, I will echo those comments. I do think this is certainly a great investment of our funds, and I know this is a need in our community. So I'm glad to see this come forward as it has and see all the different pieces that it takes to make something like this fly. And certainly I'm glad the city's able to participate and get some of the credit.
Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm certainly in support of this. I think it's, from a redevelopment standpoint, is going to be a wonderful opportunity. From a housing standpoint, I think it'll help us with our regional housing needs. And from a social standpoint, these students are already in our community as it is, and this is just, a program that will probably better serve their needs. My interaction with this particular program is that it's very well monitored. The students that are selected are really selected that are appropriate to be out on their, mostly on their own, but they certainly have quite a bit of accountability. There are a lot of barriers that these young people face, and so these services are definitely warranted and needed. So I think it'll be a real benefit to the community at large.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you. On the fiscal side of it, on the redevelopment side of it, it makes eminent sense to do this. It's a tremendous advantage to get four very low housing units in. On the social side of it, I can't imagine being a 17-year-old or 16-year-old foster kid that's in this situation. So to be able to provide this kind of an environment in our community, I think is extremely important. I'm very pleased we're able to do this. I can support this wholeheartedly.
Thank you. I too view this as a win-win, both for Family Care Network and for us as well, for all of the reasons that have been stated, particularly a win for the young people that will circulate through the program and benefit from the program. It is a needed service here in the city. I would echo Councilmember Dickens' comments with regard to hopefully seeing a majority of the participants in this program actually come from our community. Item number 12, City Council Member Items. We have none this evening. Item 13, City Manager Items. None this evening, Steve. Council Communication. Any council member have anything they want to share here?
Yes. This is something that was in the priority focus that we got on December 31st. Talking about the VLF gap loan financing program. And I thought it might be useful for the city to take a look at this. I had a chance to talk to Steve a little bit about it. Basically, what it costs us if we were to participate is about 5 to 8% of the revenues that the state's holding back from us. But the upside is that we're off the hook if the state decides to default on those funds. And I think it might be worthwhile considering what is going on right now at the state level with everything, even recognizing that 1A passed and we're supposed to be guaranteed these funds and everything. I do think that there's at least it might warrant a little bit of looking into it.
Okay. Did you want to comment on that, Steve?
No, we'd be glad to do that. Yeah, initially, we were going by the assumption that the state would be paying back this money up under Prop 1A, but Councilmember Arnold brought forward a good consideration that we hadn't really thought of, is it does potentially provide some guarantee to us, and maybe it would be worth that. So we'll provide some additional analysis and then bring it back to council.
Well, I think the most recent presentation by the governor on the budget and other related items, I think there is some concern on the part of several of the parties who perhaps participated in some strategies to address these issues prior to the election. So it might not hurt to kind of revisit that. Any other council communication?
Is it just because I'm not used to this? This is also where we would, based on the EBC meetings, this is where we give the reports for committees, or is that done a different?
That's probably the next meeting. We will have committee reports. This is any contact with the community or any other noteworthy item that you'd like to bring up?
And I have none.
Okay. Staff communication?
No, sir.
All right. That takes us to item 16, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward and comment on any item, whether it's on the agenda or not. Any takers this evening? Okay. Going to go easy on us tonight, huh? Okay. Close that. And that takes us to item 17, motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. City Council, Redevelopment Agency is adjourned.